Bhuta,
Bhuta,
Sukshma, Sukshmatmani,
Sukshmatmani,
Mahi,
Mahi,
Tanmatram,
Tanmatram,
Bharayam,
Bharayam,
Manaha,
Manaha,
Animanam,
Animanam,
Avapnoti,
Avapnoti,
Tanmatra,
Tanmatra,
Upasako,
Upasako,
Nama,
Nama,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Animanam Abhapnoti,
Animanam Abhapnoti,
Tanmatro Pasako Mama,
Tanmatro Pasako Mama,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Tanmatram Dharayen
Manaha, Tanmatram Dharayen
Manaha, Animanam Abhapnoti,
Animanam Abhapnoti,
Tanmatro Pasako Mama,
Tanmatro Pasako Mama,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Animanam Abhapnoti,
Animanam Abhapnoti,
Tanmatro Pasako Mama,
Tanmatro Pasako Mama,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Animanam Avapnoti,
Animanam Avapnoti,
Tanmatro Pasako Mama,
Tanmatro Pasako Mama,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Animanam Avapnoti,
Animanam Avapnoti,
Tanmatro Pasako Mama,
Tanmatro Pasako Mama,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mahi,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Tanmatram Dharayen Manaha,
Bhuta,
Bhuta,
sukshma
of the subtle elements.
Atmani,
Atmani
in the soul. Mayi
in me.
Tanmatram
on
the subtle elemental forms of perception. Dhariyet, one should concentrate. Manaha, the mind. Animanam, the mystic perfection called Animan. Avapnoti, obtains. Tat matra, in the subtle elements.
Upasakaha,
the worshipper.
Mama,
me. One who worships me in my atomic form, pervading all subtle elements, fixing his mind on that alone, obtains the mystic perfection called anima. Purport. Anima refers to the mystic ability to make oneself smaller than the smallest, and thus be able to enter within anything. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is within the atoms and atomic particles, and one who perfectly fixes his mind in that subtle atomic form of the Lord acquires the mystic potency called anima, by which one can enter within even the most dense matter, such as stone.
Om Ajana Timirantasya Ranandana Salakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakata Mayam Tathati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Patakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavamsta Sri Rupam Sagrasatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sativam Sādvaitam sāvadhūtam parijana sahitam prashnate hetam devam Sri Radha Krishnapadam sahagana vadita Sri Vishakhanditam cha E Krishna Karana Sangam Dinavadho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopikakanta Ahakantam Sapta Kamshana Godahi Radhe Vrindavan Shalini Shavaru Sute Devi Namami Hari Priye Pancha Kopataru Yascha Kapa Sintho Vriva Cha Pakita Nam Kapanishyo Vishvishyo Namo Namo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
Bhuta Sukshmatmani Mani, Tanmatram, Hare Mana, Animanam Abhavnoti, Tanmatro Vasako Mama. In this chapter, the mystic potencies acquired by the yogi are described. And here, how to achieve each of these mystic powers is described. And starting with anima. Anima means to become smaller than the smallest. Prabhupada told that during the Raj, there was some yogi who was sitting naked in a public place, or walking around naked in a public place. So the British authorities arrested him, indecent exposure. So they put him in jail, but then soon after they found that he was back in the same place, dressed the same way. So they put him in jail again. But same thing happened. because he had that mystic potency, anima. So he becomes smaller than the smallest, walk outside the jail, no problem. Apparently the British authorities were not quite equipped to deal with this sort of prisoner. So such wonderful capabilities are available. One can become smaller than the smallest and enter into anything, even into stone. Of course, these potencies are, in the final analysis, material. Prabhupada mentions in Nectar of Devotion that the modern builders of subways are also able to enter within the stone. They're able to enter within the earth. Similarly, become lighter than the lightest, lugging up. Only 747s can do that. There are so many material ways to achieve more or less the same result. So a Krishna conscious person is not very much interested in mystic powers. Bhakti mukti siddhi kami sakala shanta Krishna bhakta nishkam adeva shanta. The materialists are after sense gratification. The salvationists are after liberation. And the mystic yogis are after mystic powers, siddhi. And because they're interested in getting these material results, shakala ashanta, they're all disturbed. Their minds are not peaceful. They're always disturbed. How to get sense gratification? How to get liberation? How to get mystic powers? They're aspiring for something. And that object they're aspiring for is temporary also. And in relationship to generally the material body, except for the salvationists, they want to actually it's also in relationship to the material body. They want to negate material bodily existence. But that's still relative to material bodily existence. You take a number and cross it out, you're still doing an operation on the number. You haven't gone beyond that number. So they want to cross out whatever numbers they have and make it zero. But it's still in relation to material existence, not past that. Whereas the Krishna conscious persons, they leave behind the material existence and they go on to the positive existence of the spiritual world on the association with Krishna. So bhakti mukti siddhi kami shakala ashanta and Krishna bhakta nishkam. The devotee of Krishna has no material desires. His only desires are the constitutional desires belonging to the spirit soul, the desire to serve Krishna. Adeva shanta. Therefore he's always peaceful under any circumstances. These mystic capabilities are not considered so great. In fact, they're considered impediments. The mystic yogis are engaged in what's supposed to be a transcendental process for spiritual advancement. And along the way, they pick up these siddhis. But if they become fascinated with these siddhis, enamored with these siddhis, then they get stuck. They get stuck. Let's suppose some government man, he's given various facilities, he's given a car, he's given a bungalow for executing his work. Now if he becomes fascinated with the car, I've got a car, I've got a bungalow, and he spends his whole time with his car and his bungalow, then he's not making progress in his government service. He's just getting, he got stuck. So the mystic yogis can get stuck in this way. They become endowed with these fantastic powers and then they become absorbed in how powerful they are. And they miss the point of further advancement to the transcendental goal. This is Maya's trick. Another trick. Maya is so clever that that if you want sense gratification, she bewilders you with sense gratification. If you want mystic powers, all right, here's mystic powers. If you want liberation, all right, take liberation. That'll work too. That will keep you, this is my last trap, liberation. Become impersonal. So the Maya is very powerful. Mama Maya Dirakse. Mami Vihaya Bhajanta. Maya Ami Bhajanta. Therefore, the devotees are not recommended to go after mystic powers. They're recommended to engage in the service of the Lord and not worry about any of these attainments, which are generally offered by Maya anyway. There's two ways they can be offered. They can be offered by the Lord, or they can be offered by the material energy. Sometimes the devotee also, by the grace of the Lord, gets great power, wonderful power. But that's not his objective, and he's not stuck on such things. His objective is to serve Krishna. If he gets some powers, that's all right. If he doesn't get powers, that's all right. Whereas the yogis specifically perform meditation to get powers. These powers are also, apart from the genuine yogis who can attain such things, these yogic siddhis are a great subject matter for cheating also. There was some yogi who came to America some years ago and taught some process of meditation. You just meditate 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the evening. I'll give you this mantra, you give me $20. And $20 times so many thousands, he can do very well for himself. But then there had to be a next stage, so they came out with a Siddhi program by which, when you enter the advanced course, which of course cost advanced bucks, then you could get these powers. And so they were advertising these things. And they didn't make very many marketing errors, but this is one of their marketing errors. The press basically ridiculed that you know, people are like sitting and meditating and then they're like hopping off the floor and that's lugging my city, they're flying. But they're flying like the way a grasshopper flies. Can't go very far. And so many people lost their money. And for what benefit? So that you can hop off the floor for Anima silly. And then there are the outright cheaters who show some mystic powers. Sometimes the person actually has mystic powers, Prabhupada said the yogi gets some mystic power. There's, what is that? Vashita Siddhi. And they get some siddhi by which they can produce something from nowhere. Just as Prabhupada gave the example of that yogi who was in his childhood, the guru of his childhood family. What would you like to eat? Well, we'd like pomegranate. So it wasn't pomegranate season, but they just walked in the next room and there was a whole branch full of pomegranates. Fresh. So this is prapti siddhi, you can get these things. So someone may get prapti siddhi or the next siddhi, the capability to control people's minds. Harima Mahima Prapti. Prakamya Shakti Ishita. Yeah, Vashita. So Vashita Shakti, the power to bring others under one's control. So yogi may get a little bit of perfection, Prakti Siddhi, Vashita Siddhi, power to control others, and then cheats people. Of course, these yogic cities are there to tiny extent in ordinary men. You know, a good salesman brings his clients under control just by speaking some attractive words. Women seem to have this power, all of them, to a certain extent. They're expert at bringing men under their control. Men can't, by rational judgment, men can't understand why he's spending so much money on this, the, that, or the other thing. But his wife is spending it, and he's very happy. So this is mystic power. Where did I see someone told a joke that some man had his credit card stolen? He didn't do anything about it because the thief was spending half as much as his wife. Anyway, so these perfections may be there, and the yogi gets a little perfection and goes around cheating people. Or lower than that, he doesn't actually have the perfection, but he just fakes it. That's some sly Babaji may do something like that. Those who've seen have you seen movie clips of Babaji doing these things? Bhakti Siddhi. They produce ash out of nowhere. But you do it like this. And then the ash is there. But you do it like that because if you have a little capsule, a little tablet of ash, and you go like that, everybody will see. But if you go like that, you're doing the same thing and nobody sees. So this is cheap magic. Or all of these things, the gold that's behind your pillow and all of this. Up your sleeve, such cheap, ragged nonsense. And big men, you know, election commissioners and so on, are accepting these cheaters as great yogis, great saints, god men, whatever that's supposed to mean. Actually, they're dog men. But they're falsely accepting as something great. And what are they teaching? Transcendence. So here, of course, we're not speaking of such things. We're looking at genuine mystic powers, which can be achieved by dharana, by meditation, tadhyana, bhuta sukshma, tanmatra, on the subtle elements. Tanmatra means the objects of sense perception, but not exactly the objects of sense perception. Like this microphone is not actually an object of sense perception. The object of sense perception, if you're using sight, is form. But form is a subtle thing. This is a particular form, a gross form of the microphone. But the actual elemental entity form is a very subtle thing. Like sound. A sound is already subtle enough, but the elemental entity called sound itself, not, you know, the kind of sound, this sound or that sound, but the very existence of sound, that's a very subtle thing. Similarly taste, similarly smell. All of these things are very subtle, extremely subtle. And if you try to meditate on exactly what sound is, not a sound, but sound in principle, or what form is, form in principle, very subtle. Bhuta Sukshma. Sukshma means very subtle. And more subtle than these tanmatras is the soul itself. How subtle the soul is. Or even for that matter, all of these things are existing due to the false ego. all manifestations emanated from false ego. So how subtle the false ego is. They're thinking, well, I don't know. False ego is very subtle. It manages to assert itself in so many different ways. We're chanting Hare Krishna, but we're thinking, I'm chanting very nicely. I am good. False ego is very persistent and very subtle. But more subtle than the false ego is the soul. What is that? Indriyani pranyahu indriye vyaptam manaha manasastu prabhuti your buddhe padajastisam. Above the sense objects or the senses, above the senses is the mind, in the center of the senses. Above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. Both subtle. Sense objects are more or less gross. Comparatively speaking, the senses are still pretty gross. Then you go to the mind, now you're getting quite subtle. In the mind, you go to intelligence, still more subtle. And then you go to the soul, so subtle. And then you go to the false ego. What's the false ego? It's not exactly matter, and it's not exactly spirit. It's the touching place of matter and spirit. Like if you touch your finger to your thumb very lightly, then there's a point which is neither your finger nor your thumb, but it's the point of contact between the two. Very exactly, you know where your thumb is, you know where your finger is, but the point of contact is a very subtle thing. The contact of the matter and spirit is especially subtle because they're different. One is temporary, one is eternal. One is full of bliss, the other is full of ignorance. Now how these two come in touch? By illusion, actually. There's no actual touch. Asango hiyam purusha, the living entity, has nothing to do with matter. But he imagines that he has something to do with matter. Imagine. It's a mental concoction. It's a false, not even a mental concoction, because the mind comes from false ego. It's an illusion. And I have something to do with matter. And then from that illusion, you get all the specific illusions. This is my home, this is my car, this is my bank balance, this is my wife, these are my children, this is my body, this is my money, this is my this, this is my that. In this way one is bewildered. I am this and this is mine. But the beginning of this whole thing, and then one goes on to the next body, and a new set of illusions. Now this is my mother, this is my father, this is my house, this is my 8,400,000 pieces of life. Boom, 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 boom. Like pressing the button on your little camera and reviewing all the different pictures in your canvas, digital work like that. Going from one body to the next body just like that, and then seeing different pictures. This is my home, this is my family, and this is a new picture. Like here I am in Paris, here I am in New York, here I am in Delhi. So here I am as a king, here I am. Each of those forms, I'm thinking, this is who I am, and this is my whatever it is. So that touch, subtle touch, so these are manifestations of false ego, but that subtle touch of the two, of matter and spirit, is false ego. The point at which the eternal spirit soul misidentifies himself with the temporary material energy. Or, looking at it from another perspective, the point at which the eternal servant of Krishna imagines, I'm independent. And try tries to and imagines that he can enjoy the material energy. Again, another perspective, the point at which the Prakriti imagines itself to be Purusha. The point at which the entity who's meant to give enjoyment imagines that he can take enjoyment. The point at which the controlled living being imagines that he can be the controller. This is called Maya. So then he comes in touch with Ichcha Dvesha Samuttena Vandva Mohena Bharata Sarvabhutani Sammoha Sarvabhutani Bharata. One becomes bewildered by these dualities of desire and aversion. Ichcha Dvesha Samuttena Vandva Mohena. And the dualities that come from that. I like this, I don't like this. Ichcha Dvesha Samuttena Vandva Mohena. Sarvabhutani Sammoha. Everyone is completely bewildered. Sammoha, not just Moha. Sammoha. Thoroughly bewildered. And Sargayati. In this way, one takes birth after birth in material existence, being bewildered by the material energy. So this is the position of the foolish living being. And that some fool, and then the foolish living being exploiting material energy takes the position of a genuine yogi or a false yogi. Either he becomes a big exploiter of mystic powers, or he pretends that he has mystic powers and cheats other people. Either way, he's cheating. And others are cheated. Oh, such a great yogi. He's God. He's this, he's that. They're fools. What is that? A fool and his money are soon separated. And that's how it works. People are getting big, big money for absolute cheaters. And they're imagining that these people have some mystic powers. And it's simply trickery. Just outright trickery. But there's the real thing also. There are genuine mystic powers obtained by this meditation on the subtle elements and on Krishna ultimately within all of these subtle elements, because Krishna is more subtle than the most subtle. Above the mind is the intelligence, above the intelligence is the soul, above the soul is the Supreme Personality of God. He's the ultimate shelter of everything. He's the ultimate shelter of all these mystic powers. He's the ultimate shelter of the material energy. He's the ultimate shelter of all living beings. So the yogi fixes his mind on Krishna in this particular aspect. He realizes Krishna as being the pervasive entity within all material elements, bhuta sukshma, within the most subtle forms of existence. You can imagine, just like the scientists, they go exploring into DNA or something like that. They have their electron microscopes and their different scientific ways, and they're going deeper and deeper into the structure of these different molecules, and they're becoming more and more. It's like, you know, traveling in outer space or something, but they're traveling. Instead of traveling outward, they're traveling into the microcosm, deep into the atom, deep into the structure of these primordial material forces. They're finding out nuclear energy within the structure of the atoms. They're finding out so many things. But they're not finding Krishna. That they're missing. They're missing Krishna. But the yogis, genuine yogis, they're exploring deep into the most subtle structures of material energy, bhuta sukshma, the subtle primordial elements, the objects of the senses in their most subtle form. These are the things they're exploring. And in that exploration, they're keeping their minds on Krishna and finding out how Krishna is present within all of these things. And by that meditation on Krishna, they get this power that they become smaller than the smallest, or they can become smaller than the smallest. The scientist doesn't have that power. He can look through his microscope and do these things, but imagine if you could become a scientist and, you know, enter into the atom that you're trying to study and wander around there, like wandering around through the New York subway system or something. You could just wander around inside the atom. The genuine yogis can do that, but they're not interested in just reporting the data in scientific journals. They're trying to realize the supreme within everything. And the successful yogis are those who are not carried away by these things, who are not motivated simply by material fascination, but who are genuinely trying to enter into Krishna consciousness. In any case, the pure devotees are not at all concerned with these mystic powers. They just concentrate on devotional service to the Lord, and as Krishna desires, they may get whatever power Krishna chooses to give. And that's all right. If they get something, it's all right. If they don't get something, that's all right. Their only interest is pure devotional service. Nadanam nadanam sundarim kavitam bhajavidhichakam. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't want to. Generally, the yogis, they're interested in dhanam, getting wealth, and janam, followers, and sundarim, they trick some female followers, or some of the more degraded apologies, they trick some young boys and get involved in some very unwholesome, nasty business. These are the cheaters. The genuine, pure devotees, they don't want anything material. They don't even want liberation. They just want to serve Krishna life after life. Actually, it's lust. Indriyani Manobhudhir Samstadhyatman and Mukhutin. The Kaitaya Vimohayatyesha. The lust means the desire for material enjoyment. Takes up residence in the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. And through these, the yogis. Just intelligence should be used for devotional service, for Krishna consciousness. Instead, someone uses intelligence to bolster his false ego. He gets a PhD and then he's very proud. He hangs his certificate on his wall. I've got a PhD. And he gives learned lectures and writes books and just that. And then in his internal monologue, he's thinking, these people are fools. The professor such and such doesn't know what he's doing, but I know. So he's puffing himself up with his material acquisition of intelligence, and meanwhile he's missing the point of life entirely. His life is slipping away while he's busy talking to himself about all of intellectual issues. Understand that anyway, the different more PhDs than anyone else. Yeah, someone told me the CIA is the biggest employer of PhDs in America, and therefore in the world. So these people have intelligence, but then the intelligence is used for how to achieve some political end and some destructive end. Come up with some, you know, how to conduct a bogus war on terror so that they can steal from other countries. So it's intelligence, but it's directed towards sense gratification. That means these people, the Brahmins, have become engaged in the business of shudras. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be the intelligent class of men. But they simply become employees, and that too, employees of 10th class men. So in this way they become degraded. Why? The intelligence is being used for sense gratification of the lowest rank. And cat has intelligence. Cat sees that you've got some milk sitting in the kitchen. So cat is intelligent, waits till you leave the kitchen, then jumps up and gets the milk. That's intelligence. But what is the opposite of intelligence? Sense gratification. But real intelligence means Krishna consciousness, how to find the ultimate truth, engage in the service of that ultimate truth. That's real intelligence. Krishna conscious person, he he wants to, you know, if he has some pride, he wants to be known that he built the biggest temple. Or he wants to be known that he distributed more books than anybody else. Or he wants to be known that he achieved this or he achieved that. So that's compared to the person who wants to be known for, you know, something degraded and nasty. And still, somehow it's in relationship to Krishna. So even his pride is excusable. And somehow or other, his pride also, that he's proud to be Krishna conscious.
And misusing or cover something?
No, it's only misusing. Anything you can misuse. So that's there. That means not fully purified.
So what should they do? How to
chant Hare Krishna. There's no other. That's our process. From day one till the last day, chant Hare Krishna. Try to avoid ten offenses. Chant attentively. That's all right. And it works. It just makes him come down.
Maybe we have to do some kind of workshop on this, and especially in this one. Devotees, you know, are we doing anything for them to give proper guidance? Which if I feel that a lot of we're not doing anything constructive to guide the devotees. The way people are, but Ratan Swami is doing it.
And so you do. Prajan Prabhu is doing a japa workshop in Govardhan every year along with Sachinanda Swami. All of our men are doing something to promote the process. Chanting to Krishna, serving Krishna. This is the purified method to serve Krishna, to chant to Krishna, to hear, to read the books, worship the deity. All of our men are promoting it. The whole movement is going on. Some enter the society a little cleaner state, some bring a lot of garbage with them. Those who've accumulated more garbage may take more time to wash it away. Or those who are more attached to their garbage. Someone's brought less garbage, but he's more attached to it. Mm-hmm. Someone's brought more, but he thinks that he can get rid of this as quickly as possible. So that's also garbage, that attachment. So therefore, we read Kundicha Marjana, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, He makes it easy. We make it difficult. Yes.
Maharaj, as you said, our only business is to serve Krishna and remain humble. But unfortunately, fortunately, not that I'm qualified, but we go through this where people get into different factions of groups. The thing is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they have our services better, our knowledge is better, we preach better. You know, you always feel there's no uniformity. People are respecting each other and serving Krishna. It's more important that our group is so much better. Our service is so much better. I am so devoted. I've been doing this for 10 years, 15 years. And you know, it seems there's such a lot of waste of energy. It's so difficult for people to remain humble. How should we, you know, in ISKCON, all of us should have that uniform feeling of being humble and
There's no uniformity. Because everyone's individual. So if you try to impose uniformity, it's not possible. It's like you try and take five kids and make them all the same. There's no way. You can't stamp out individuality. My bodies are trying to dissolve individuality because it's such an impediment. But that doesn't work either. It can't be dissolved. So our devotional method is that we accept that there's individuality. People are at their own stages of spiritual advancement. Some have, may have this attachment, that attachment. artificially make everything, you know, like flat earth, it's not going to work. So we have to accept that, all right, some people will be more advanced, some people will be less advanced. So like in a business, suppose you say that all my employees will be at this standard. They'll never be all of that standard. You know, they're going to be, this one's going to be a great salesman but has trouble getting along with people. This one gets along with everyone great, but he's not very productive. This one, you know, something else. This one, he's productive, he gets along great with people, but he kind of runs up expenses. You know, there's always something. And you can't just make it everybody's going to be, you know, like the ideal kid. You know, that all kids are going to be ideal. They're all going to, you know, be clean and respectful and this and that. You know, that's, you know, it doesn't exist. So, you know, the ideal society comes as utopian, to think that everybody will be, you know, there'll be no problems, everybody will be free from all competitive spirit. And all. So Prabhupada engaged these things. He saw, all right, you want to be better, then you distribute more books than that. Be better. But then the result of your endeavor to be competitive is Krishna becomes, Krishna's service is increased. So,
in this respect, Mahavishnu Swami is giving a very nice example of Maharaj. People ask them why you problem, your wound has more problems. So he said in one word, yes, we have problems because our movement is alive. Dead man don't have
problems. Yeah, dead man has no problems. Exactly.
Our movement is alive. As long as Mangalarti, Sanjayarti is going on, it's fine. Isn't it?
Also, we should be careful that we don't become contaminated by subtle maya. You know, this group is contaminated by clubbishness and feeling that we're better. We're not like them. You know, they're contaminated by this maya. We're not like them. And there we are getting critical. Yeah, well, it can happen, right? That we become either more contaminated or more contaminated than we should be. Because Maya gets us. Maya is so subtle that she finds us, yeah, that, no, we should be pure devotees. We shouldn't be like those people over there. And pretty soon we're, you know, meditating on how much better we are than them.
So I don't satisfy why you say that there is individuality, because I'm thinking that if we've been serving the Lord, if we've been chanting, that process, you know, should be making us looking in only in that direction.
Yeah,
so
sure.
How should we become different from our understanding? Should every become such that everybody is gradually getting.
Yeah, and our understanding is that we should be able to see that also. It's said about Raghunath Bhakta Goswami that he wouldn't hear any criticism of Vaishnavas. He would just say, all the Vaishnavas are engaged in the service of the Lord. So one thing is our vision. You know, if we want, we can see all the faults and all the groups and all the devotees and everything, you know, where their anarthas are. And if we want, we can see how wonderful it is that they're all engaged in Krishna service in different ways. It's just a question. It's not only, you know, also what's in our power to fix? Can we fix that they're over-competitive or over-aggressive or whatever it is? No. Can we fix that we're looking at the negative side instead of the positive side? That's within our power.
And Mother is saying that we're chanting, we're doing, we are thinking we are chanting. But actually, we are not chanting. It's a vibration of
it. I'm listening to some seminars by Guru Shankar where he's talking about this, how we're chanting Hare Krishna, but instead of hearing, we're involved in a mental dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, we're thinking, now I'm chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Not so bad now. I'm hearing nicely Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Maybe I'm hearing more than anybody else in the room. Yeah, actually, you know, they're not really, you know, I don't know why people don't chant with attention. And then pretty soon, there it is. I'm busy talking to the mind instead of hearing the transcendental sound vibration. And not only am I talking to the mind, but pretty soon I'm talking to the mind about its criticism of other Vaishnavism. And, you know, why are they like that? And, you know, after 14 years, how come they're still doing this? And how come they're still doing that? After 14 years, how come I'm still thinking about all that?
In this aspect, Radha-Vandana is bent by finding faults on others. One works like a vacuum cleaner with them. First thing we try to find faults like a vacuum. That's not how we are working on them, instead of looking the positive aspect.
It's actually subversive to devotional service. There's agroho natamanita. There in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna describes the qualities of a person in knowledge, the qualities of the devotee. One is the aversion to fault finding. It doesn't like to find the faults in other devotees. It's like Ambarish Maharaj, she was, Durvasa got so angry at him and sent this demon and so many things. But Ambarish Maharaj was just feeling that the yogis in so much difficulty. So, what is that? Maitra-karana-evacha. A devotee near Mahal-near-hankara. This is a devotee. He has no false ego. He's a friend to everyone. If someone is contaminated, then he's just compassionate. It's his problem. I'm probably told that there was one godbrother of his who was in a big administrative post in Gaudiya Math. And everyone would complain about him. And specifically, I think it was alleged that he was embezzling money or taking money in some way, something like that. And on one occasion, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur criticized him, that you're simply thinking about the money and you're not thinking about, you know, the spiritual welfare of this person. You know, you've got a problem. So in that way, we have to think that if somebody's over-competitive or over-rupish or over this or over that, that's his misfortune. We hope that by Krishna consciousness he'll make progress in advance. Not that, we're well-wishers of all the devotees. And we appreciate their good qualities, and if there's some bad qualities, we hope that be, you know, cleansed away. We're confident that if he continues in devotion, the devotional life, it will be cleansed away. And ultimately, everything is up to Krishna. Yeah, that's all. That itself is a good quality, to meditate on the good qualities of others. That's how the symptom of the great soul. It says that the great souls, there's any small good quality, they magnify it. And the crooked souls, if there's any small defect, they magnify that.
I think ultimately we're trying to become Krishna Maharaj, because it's Krishna's job to see who.
Yes, it's Krishna's business.
We might not be, unless he's really disturbing the activities, we just ignore and go on.
If it's our duty, then we have to do something, you know.
Otherwise,
you know,
it's mind
your
business. Yeah, exactly.
And in Bombay, somebody had asked this question, chant and be happy. Then why don't we become happy? So, he gave a nice answer that the problem is that we are not chanting, we are only counting.
Who said that?
Bombay.
Yeah. Some god brother said, you know, that you asked him how he's chanting, he said, he's just pushing beads. So, attentive chanting.
Saying that it takes as much time to chant a good round as a bad round, so I tell you.
Yeah. I've heard that, but my theory is that it actually takes more time to chant the bad rant. Because there's all that dialogue that you have to take care of. I suspect it would take longer.
I didn't really longer in faster about it.
Yeah, because there's nothing else going on. You know, like, you know, what moves faster, a vehicle or a vehicle with so many things attached to it. So many things going on. What's easier, to talk to one person or talk to five people? Do one thing, or do you try to do one thing while five other things are on your mind? Focus on. So at least we could say it doesn't take more time to chant a good round than a bad round. And it maybe, may save your time. Maybe it'll be quick. It's an incentive. Chant purely, it's faster. Any reason. We should chant the time it takes 5 or 4. Then the chanting will be faster.
Prabhu was telling the other day, chanting is a medicine. It works, he says. It's whether mind is there or not there, if you're eating, taking medicine, it works. So
it works, but if you, this is medicine that works better if your mind is focused on it.
Yeah, that's what he said. If you please chant, keep on chanting, you will become. You try on, that's just going to be. Don't worry about
quality
will come if you do something like that.
Yeah, in the beginning we chant and we know that there'll be offenses. That's called the offensive stage of chanting. But we try to avoid the offenses. It's not that we just say, well, all right, I'll just chant and not worry about the offenses. We try to avoid them. And then we come to the clearing stage, in which the offenses diminish. And then the highest stage is pure chanting. So in one sense, we know there's nothing I can do about it. I'm going to be in the offensive stage at the present moment. But I should try to avoid the offenses as far as possible so that I'll come to the next stage.
Can I copy this? Can we turn it off first?